Rabbi Beryl Wein is a historian, a teacher of Torah, a lawyer, a columnist, and a popular Jerusalem lecturer. In the program Wein Online, he talks about the meaning of the Torah portion of the week. Rabbi Wein, what parsha are we talking about this week?
This week is the parsha of Korach, which is a direct rebellion against Moshe. It's a result already of all of the bad news that preceded it. Moshe suffers a series of reverses. His father-in-law, Yisro, doesn't want to accompany them anymore. He goes back home to Midian. The Jewish people complain about the food. They don't like the mon anymore. The spies come back from the land of Israel and give a negative report.
His poll numbers are dropping.
That's right, exactly. So it was Moshe's and that and the... And then the worst part is that he's got to serve out the rest of his term, which is 38 years in the desert, right, with these people who are likely to blame him for everything, because people are loath to blame themselves. And the people who put themselves in leadership positions always are vulnerable to the fact that it's their fault. And whatever happens, it's their fault. And many times what happens is uncontrollable and has nothing to do with the leader, but that doesn't excuse him. So Korach sees this as the opportune moment. Moshe is at his weakest. Moshe doesn't have really great public support. And he puts together a wonderful a program of demagoguery. He says, you know, who Moshe? And he's full of patronage. He gives his brother a job. He gives his nephews a job. Everybody's got a job. He gives his tribe. They're the Levium. And everybody. So, when people are in opposition, the opposition can be made up of many, many disparate parties who really have nothing to do with each other and who hate each other, but they're all united in one goal to topple the government.
Who else was in the opposition with...
You had Dosan Vavirom, you had the tribe of Reuven, you had every malcontent. Mm-hmm. The people that objected to Moshe's rules regarding sexual probity, you people that objected to... And you have the bitterness of having to sit in the desert for 38 years to die, right? And to know that you're not going to go anywhere. So that's not a happy group. You're not going to be able to make it easy for them. And therefore, Korach, he mocks the mitzvot. He says, a house that's full of books doesn't need a mezuzah, which is, the rabbi saw that as a bald statement that intellect rules over faith. Mm-hmm. If I have a PhD and I'm a professor, then what do I need? Why do I have to wear tzitzit? Or what I have to observe the Sabbath, right? I'm smarter than that. That's for the dummies. He also puts together moral questions, the poor widow that came to Moshe, and because of the stringencies of halacha, he wasn't able to take care of her. So that's front page news, right? You can read that article in the newspapers almost every day here in Israel or in the United States or anywhere else in the world, right? So that's the moral argument. Moshe's heartless. The Torah is heartless. So he puts all of this together, Korach, and he mounts a rebellion, and the people are on his side. But as all rebels eventually do, he overreaches. And after a while, he believes his own propaganda, which is the worst of all things. And he thinks that he can engage in a contest with Moshe. He can bring the incense after seeing Aaron's two sons die because of the incense. What a delicate and lethal offering that is. He's willing to engage in the contest. He's sure he's going to win. And he doesn't. That only adds to the bitterness of the people. only adds to this tragedy of the situation, because they're misled and they see that they're misled. So sometimes it takes a long time to see when you're misled. But here the earth opens its mouth and swallows them right away, so there's no doubt anymore. But nevertheless, the bitterness remains, and we see it throughout all of the years in the desert. Moshe, in his final speech, says, "Mamre me yusem, you always were rebellious." It's not a happy time, not a happy time at all. And the frustration of what could have been and what is, the difference between the two, definitely contributes to the sadness. So we experience that in our lives many, many times. I think part of the disappointment that we have here in the land of Israel and our constant warring within ourselves is because we thought 10 years ago that we're on the way to somewhere. Mm-hmm. And if we wouldn't have thought that way, so we wouldn't be so embittered today. Right? We wouldn't have fooled ourselves. But now it's doubly bitter, because not only do we know what the situation really is, we had a glimpse of what we thought it could be. So all of that is combined in this Parsha of Korach. There's one happy note I never like to leave our listeners.
What's the happy note, Rabbi?
On a downer. Well, the happy note is that the Torah will say, "Uvnei Korach lo meisu." Korach's children didn't die. Korach's descendants will yet be Levites in the temple. And we will recite their psalm. In fact, before we sound the shofar on Rosh Hashanah, we recite L'Natzeach Livnei Korach Mizmor, the psalm of the descendants of Korach. So maybe one generation doesn't get it, and maybe two generations don't get it, but eventually the Jewish people get it. Eventually somebody comes, and we see that today also. There, I teach in a school where almost all the young men come from very assimilated backgrounds, from generations of people who really had no concept of Judaism, etc. And here they come to Jerusalem, they sit and they study Torah and Talmud, and they're wonderful people, and they're going to build Jewish homes, etc. So the children of Korach didn't die. So there's a lesson in that, too, that this is as difficult and as depressed as we may be, we should realize that the children of Korach didn't die. The Jewish people are an eternal people, and will survive this as well.
An uplifting note from Korach. You've been listening to Rabbi Beryl Wein talking about the Torah portion of the week. Join us again next week.